Hello, I'm Josh Widdicombe.
And I'm Rob Beckett.
Welcome to Lockdown Parenting Hell, the show in which Rob and I discuss what it's like to be a parent during lockdown, which I would say can be a little tricky. So, in an effort to make some kind of sense of the current situation...
and to make me feel better about my increasingly terrible parenting skills...
each episode we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how well they're coping.
Or hopefully not.
And we will be hearing from you, the listener, with your tales of lockdown parenting woe.
Because, let's be honest, none of us know what we're doing. Hello, and you are listening to Lockdown Parenting Hell with...
1 second, Rob.
Sorry, Josh, I was too eager for you. I'm a bit calmer than I was on Tuesday today.
That's good.
Calm down a bit.
Bit more zen.
Bit more zen. Just sometimes I just feel so alive, Josh, and there's not enough time or enough words to express that. So I scream into a pillow.
That's good. That's the main thing, that you've got an outlet.
Yeah.
Ready?
Yeah.
Can you say Rob Beckett?
Aw.
There you go.
Strong delivery there.
That is 2.5-year-old Flory Knight. Flory's a nice name.
Flory Knight.
Something that vaguely resembles your names. I thought it was quite good. We're living in Portugal and away from family. Your podcasts keep us going and laughing our heads off. We love you guys. We hope Flory can introduce one of your podcasts. She has.
Yeah. Flory Knight sounds like the name of like someone associated with the craze. Flory Knight turned out of a shooter.
How are you, Rob?
Yeah, good. We're sort of getting into our rhythm a bit. We've schooled. The house is slowly getting cleaner and tidier. The big piles of admin are getting sorted out. We're slowly getting our life back, Josh. How's it going in Casa del Widdicombe?
Good, fine. Do you know what? I think we should just get into the emails, Rob.
It's the Lockdown Parenting Mailbag. But it's actually emails and there's no bag.
Do you want some World Cup emails?
Yes, so this is about dealing with a newborn and a huge international sporting tournament.
Yes. Hi, Rob and Josh. I had an absolute result. This is from Kane Harmon. Had an absolute result with my now 2-year-old boy. He was born on the 3rd of July, 2018. Specifically, he was born during the first minute of penalties, England v Colombia.
Oh, that was the greatest summer of my life.
And mine.
Love Island. Was peak Love Island.
That's not the reason it was mine, but yes.
It was great. You had the football and then straight into Love Island. It was the best. Oh my God, I loved it. Sorry, Josh. They've had a baby.
In the first minute of the penalties, England v Colombia, while I missed the penalties, my wife had insisted on watching the game during the labour.
Oh, it'd take your mind off it, I suppose.
Well, exactly. Unfortunately, our stream was slower than the person down the hall in maternity ward.
Oh,
so
no.
We knew Harry Kane was about to score.
Oh, that's good and bad, isn't it? That, I remember when you used to watch in the World Cups when the back windows are open and back doors are open, and if someone's watching it on like analog and someone's watching it on Sky, Analog always got it first.
Well, and I watched England beat Argentina in the 2002 World Cup in our student bar. One of the TVs was faster than the other one, so we were behind the other half of the bar.
It takes away all the anticipation. What did she say? How did it affect her birth?
Oh, this is from the dad. It doesn't.
Oh, right.
They said about the slower stream. He said, but then the reason he's emailed is I then had a whole month of paternity leave. I watched every game while feeding, changing, and lulling our newborn to sleep.
That's what I'm saying, Josh. That you're going to watch so much, and you just have to learn to take shifts when the games are on.
Wow. Yes, I agree.
Can I suggest something? Have you got an iPad?
Yeah, I've got an iPad.
Right, here's what you're going to do. You want to get a buggy that's got a flat bit so you can put the iPad on the buggy.
Yeah.
And then you can sync it up to your phone and use that as a hotspot. And then you can stream the game because it's normally all on free to view, isn't it?
Yeah,
ITV or BBC.
Is.
Watch it on the iPad and push the kid around the park.
Oh, my
And then
word.
When the baby's asleep, sit on a bench with the iPad in front of you. Yes, please.
Oh, my
and
word.
And Bluetooth headphones. Thank you very much. I've made your summer. Josh, I'm going to send you this. We've had two things come in. This is quite Josh Widdicombe heavy. It's taking me back to the salty Josh Widdicombe days, but no one's come in with any more salt recently. But
Well, it's because I haven't been out, isn't it?
The bloke at the tip will hate you, though, because he turned up, didn't book in, thinking he's all the big un, been running red lights. Who does he think he is? And this is Jess Appleton. I'm really resenting the glee with which Josh chucked in Plymouth 1-4-3 yesterday on Tuesday's episode. I'm married to the manager of the team they beat, and fuck me.
What?
Sunday was a tough day on the conversation front.
No way.
So who did you beat?
I can't even remember who we beat.
Oh, this is going to go down badly with Jess Appleton. You can't even remember that you beat her husband's team.
Oh, well, if she's called Jess Appleton, then the manager's Michael Appleton, isn't it?
Yeah, so who does he manage?
We beat Lincoln 4-3. He's doing fine. Lincoln are doing very well. They're second in the league.
Well, he doesn't like losing, though, because she said Sunday was a tough day on the conversation front. Luckily, we have a TV in 5-month-old to fill the silence.
Oh, my word.
So that really hit home to a listener. Now, this, Josh, I'm going to send this to you. It's a doll that's for sale. So, hi, Rob and Josh. Loving the podcast. Listening from Dublin, usually when I get out for a run to escape my husband and six-year-old son. It's my son's birthday in April, so I've been browsing the Smiths website for a present for him. Came across this Josh lookalike. I feel it's a striking resemblance. All the best with the new baby, Josh. He could turn out like this little guy.
Absolutely fucking amazing. That is so good.
That is exactly you and the exact same hair, but I've never seen you in shorts. Are you a shorts guy?
Not unless I'm on holiday. Or, obviously exercising, I wear shorts.
No, but like leisure in the summer UK.
Well, I would. Yeah, I will. But I never feel totally comfortable in the... I've got very pale legs, Rob.
Yeah, but you shouldn't worry about that. Everyone else, we're British. Of course we're going to be weirder, Rob, if they're brown.
I bet you my legs are paler than yours.
What would you be more insecure about? Absolutely bronzed Adonis legs and nothing else. Everything else pale.
What do you mean nothing else? How dare you?
Well, just like that's the only thing that's brown. Like, you feel self-conscious that they're pale, but it'd be weirder if they were perfectly bronzed.
It would. I'll give you that.
Have you ever been to Thailand?
No, I haven't been to Thailand, Rob. Have you?
Yeah. It's so hot, mate. Too hot for polo shirts.
So do you enjoy a flip-flop? I just find they're an uncle.
I used to love a flip-flop. Now I'm a slider guy.
You're a slider guy?
I wear sliders on holiday. I wouldn't wear sliders out and about, but I used to wear flip-flops and espadrilles out and about a lot. We spoke about my dog shit espadrille experience, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
I've not really worn them since that. But what I've learned is when you have kids, you have to have a sturdy bit of footwear because you don't know where you're going to end up in a day.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. When you're young, with no kids, you can just go to the pub with flip-flops on. I haven't got a care in the world. But when there's a kid involved, there's all sorts. They tread on them. You roll over your foot with the wheel of the pushchair. You've got to go over hardy foot. Hardy shoe.
Yeah, fair enough.
Hi, Rob and Josh. I've heard lots of people writing in about their kids' early rising and wanted to share a hack we stumbled across recently with our almost two-year-old. She tends to wake around 6, 6.15, so not too bad, but not ideal for a weekend, mum and dad lying. Ever since she was a baby, we've used a Bluetooth speaker to play white noise into her room. And a few weeks ago, she got massively into the Gruffalo. I decided to try playing the audiobook through the speaker. And when she woke up and started to call for us, it worked like a charm. Now, she'll happily sit in her cot for another half an hour, 45 minutes, listening to a story while we reconcile ourselves to getting up. Not sure how it would work with kids who are not in a cot anymore, but wanted to pass on anyone with little
idea.
Early risers. This is from Rachel. It's a great idea because when they start to get a bit annoyed, they go, oh, the Gruffalo, and just listen to an audiobook. And that's sort of educational, isn't it?
Yeah, that is really, you know, we've got one of those things that plays the audiobooks, but when we got it, we played it and then she'd go to sleep and that got her into a waking up in the night situation. So we had to stop using it.
Well, have you got that box that you put an actual figure of an animal on, like an actual Gruffalo figure, and it plays the Gruffalo?
No, it's
and
kind
you
of
take
what,
it on.
I think it's called YOLO. It's good. It's really good because it does the, you know, the old sun and the moon thing as well. It's got that.
Oh, that one. Now we've got a thing called a Tony. Is it called a Tony?
I don't know.
Tonys, that's what they're called, right? It's a box, yeah, and it's a speaker, but you can control it from your phone, but they get little figures, so like little like mini figures of things, whether they're like a Peppa Pig, Gruffalo, Peppa Pig, whatever. And as you put it on, it plays an episode of the Gruffalo, plays an episode, so you can get like Aladdin, Lion King, all sorts of different stories and characters. And you can also get ones where you can record messages to them and read them a book yourself. So if you're away at work, you could record it and send it to like Bluetooth, but they're really good and they can control them as well then, so you could give them a little figure in the morning. But I think the key there is they're still in a cot. It's such a game changer, the cot. Keep them in the cot for as long as possible.
Well, you say that, Ellis James's sleep problems, his child's sleep problems, were completely solved by the move to the bed.
Really?
Yeah. So you remember when we spoke to him and it was all going badly? I mean, badly is an understatement. They moved him to the bed, straight onto the 7:30 wake-ups.
I think, really, it's just a game of luck. I think that's the thing. You can send yourself mad with science, but it's ultimately a game of luck, isn't it? But you can try. It makes yourself feel better that you've got a plan.
Anyone that's got a surefire tip on a child, it's not surefire.
Well, we're going to find out with your new child and the nose stroke technique to get him to sleep.
Oh, can't wait to bring back the nose stroke. Didn't work the first time. Can it work the second time?
Josh, I've got a question, and a lot of the podcast listeners have got the same question.
Yes.
Has Rose sent the 2-year-old Christmas presents to her cousins in Nottingham?
No, she hasn't sent the 2-year-old Christmas presents at all.
For people that aren't aware of what we're doing, Josh, and they're new to it, Rose has presents for her cousins she hasn't sent from 2 years ago. Is that right?
2 years ago, Christmas 2018.
Yes, and you've basically put the threat out that as every week goes by, if she hasn't sent them, we will open one of the presents.
So we opened David's tiny karaoke microphone last week.
Have you had presents from them at Christmas?
Yeah, oh yeah, we've still been receiving their presents.
Oh my God, this is even worse. So they are still sending you Christmas presents, but you still haven't sent any since 2018, and now we're opening them.
Yeah.
Poor David.
This is David's mum, Lindsay.
Lindsay. So this is Rose's auntie?
Rose's auntie. Oh, do you know what, Rob? It's a solid gift.
Oh, what is it? What's Lindsay got?
It's only a reusable coffee cup.
Aren't all coffee cups reusable?
No, like a one that you take to the coffee shop with the lid.
Oh, all right, I thought you meant like a mug. You've been just launching crockery in the bin.
I'm like Jay-Z, mate. My mug's a box fresh.
I've got 99 mugs and reusing one. I give up. I panic.
It's fine. We knew where we were going.
Delete that, Michael. Delete my panic joke. Yeah, so it's a reusable. Oh, is it Bluetooth? Is it heated, or is it just a classic reusable?
No, it's a classic. It's Sol is the brand. It's a nice brand. It's a glass reusable coffee cup.
Oh, glass is dangerous.
Glass is dangerous.
It's going to crack in the bag, and that's never going to get through the postal system to Nottingham.
But you're right, Rob. It did never get through the post system to Nottingham.
That's not a bad present, actually.
No.
That's not too bad, is it? So you've got the... I think we should play a new game where what you do is you leave the present... Once we've opened them all, we leave them all out on your wall at the front of your house and see what goes first.
What goes first?
Oh, we could have a sweepstake on it. And we could set up a live stream. That's what we should do, Josh. Oh. We should put them at the front of your house, right? And then set up through your window by the front door an iPad live streaming on Instagram and then leave it running for like all day and see what goes first. That'd be a fun thing to do, wouldn't it?
That would be fun.
Am I an influencer? That'd be fun. I think we should do that with them all at the end.
All right. I'll put them in a pile.
Yeah. Lovely. Okay.
I've got no idea where the microphone is. But I'll find it.
Are you tempted to use any of the stuff, like the microphone or the mug?
Well, the mug is genuinely useful. Obviously, the microphone is a complete piece of shit.
How many presents have we got left out of interest?
4 or 5.
Oh, my God. How many cousins has she got?
So she's got probably 4 or 5 cousins and then the parents.
Oh, right. Okay. So there's a lot of Nottingham crew. A lot of Nottingham crew.
I'm not going to lie, Rob. This is going to get us through to the reopening of the pubs, content-wise.
Oh, perfect. I've got a good email here, Josh, we can finish on before we introduce the Gabby of Logan. Rebecca Fennell has said, "Hey, Josh and Rob, your stories of kids mispronouncing things reminded me of one of my son's tennis lessons when he was 5. His tennis coach was called Jemima. And on one occasion, when I dropped him off, I heard kids from the previous lesson say goodbye. I nearly died laughing when I heard not one little voice, but 2 in succession as they were twin girls pipe up and say to the coach, 'Bye-bye, vagina,' instead of Jemima. And also, around age 3, 4, my son could not pronounce treats and after dinner would always ask for his tits. My son just turned 18 in lockdown, so hang in there, guys. They do eventually grow up. Love the podcast. Been isolating alone through lockdowns. You've genuinely kept me laughing. Thank you. Much love, Bex."
Wow. Thank you, Bex. I mean, as soon as you said Jemima, I was going through the Rolodex. I won't lie. I had the right answer before it came up, Rob.
Yeah, you was on V before I finished Jemima.
Yeah. Do you know what I thought the other day? We never say, this is how you get in touch, and please leave us iTunes reviews. So please do leave us 5-star iTunes reviews.
It does help.
The amount that Peter Crouch has got is fucking inhumane.
I love how petty you get about stuff like that. You love it. You love comparing and contrasting.
Can't believe it. But we should say the email address.
Oh, yeah, go on.
Well, is it hello@lockdownparenting.com? com.
I'll be honest with you, mate. I've got no idea.
No, but people do get in touch. I think it's in the description. It's in the description.
It's like the dark web. They find out our email. I don't even know what it is.
Either that or Michael's writing all these, in which case it's a hell of an imagination.
Who cares? If it gets us the numbers up, it gets the numbers up. This has got a nice ending because previously we spoke about when my wife had to go into hospital for a week or so and talking to children about their parents being unwell and the best way to do it. This one's from Sarah Hoddy. This may be a little long, but it's got a happy ending and would help answer how to tell children mummy or daddy is ill. When I was 5, my sister was 1, my dad was diagnosed with pelvic cancer. Obviously, at this age, I wasn't quite sure what was going on, but within a month of my dad being diagnosed, he had to have his leg and half of his pelvis removed.
Jesus.
He was in hospital for a long time, and my mum told me my sister that he had gone on a long holiday. When he came back, he had no limb, so my parents thought it would be a good idea to tell us that he had wrestled a shark and won a competition, but lost his
How
leg
old
in
the kids?
Battle. At this age, 5 and 1.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it's hard to try to explain the pelvic cancer to a 5-year-old. I mean, so anyway, they've told them that he went and had a fight with a shark and he won but lost his leg. When I got to primary school, I was so proud that my dad wrestled a shark that I told everyone in my class. This inadvertently caused a lot of the other kids to become scared of the sea, to which point my parents told me what really happened and he had a horrible disease so that the children would be scared of the sea anymore.
Oh, my God.
And this is a nice ending. Sarah says, my dad has been cancer-free for 22 years and rocks my world.
Oh, that's nice. That's
nice, nice story. But, yeah, the old shark fight.
But he did lose his other leg to a shark, which was a terrible...
A terrible turn of events.
Terrible turn of events. He lost his other leg to a shark.
Should we introduce Gabby Logan? This was a fun interview, this.
I love Gabby Logan. And also, what's interesting about these is you don't know what direction they're going to go in. And
no.
I didn't realise we'd just spend so long talking about her just having a very tall son.
Yeah. We spent a lot of time on that, didn't we? It was a great episode, though.
Enjoy it.
And rate and review and email us. And also, if someone could email us and tell us what our email address is, that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. Drop it into the emails. What's our email address? Gabby Logan, hello.
Hi.
We've kind of started. How are you?
Actually, I know you're not supposed to say this. I'm all right.
You're all right?
Good. I'm okay. I'm quite good. I've had a good start to the week. Everything seems to be... I'm tempting fate now, aren't I?
Yeah, but you've got an athlete's mentality though, haven't you?
Yeah.
That's the thing. You've got, I've always said to Josh before we started interviewing you, because, you know, you was in the Commonwealth Games and stuff. You're like, you've got athlete's mentality, but to broadcasting. And you're just so efficient, so good at it, and just so switched on. Because we bumped into each other quite a lot at different corporate hosted events. And you just, it's like, you're like a broadcast machine. You're just on it. It's so impressive that you're
Meanwhile,
so...
Meanwhile, Beckett's pacing up and down backstage.
Yeah.
Oh, bloody hell. What am I going to do?
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. And
the,
then
last,
you sort of...
the last corporate we did was probably the last corporate I did with people, because that was like mid-February last year.
Yes, it was. It was like some sort of company conference you were hosting.
They just booked me again for next year. They booked you? I'm joking. No, they haven't
booked me again.
Yeah, but I think they have a different comedian every time.
Oh, okay. Well, why don't they have a different host every time? Surely.
I've done it for 10 years, that gig, right?
So, still rubbing it in.
It's all right for you, Rob. I've never fucking done it, mate.
You might be doing it next year, Josh, right?
I might be doing it next year.
We've had McIntyre, we've had Bishop, we've had the whole, you know, the whole gamut.
Yeah.
So you'll be...
Yeah, so if they cut the budget, you might get a call next year, Josh. Anyway, Gabby, let's have a chat about your setup at home with kids. What's the kids' setup?
So the setup is, I've got twins who are 15. They'll be 16 in the summer. So they're in the year of no GCSEs. That was a big night in our house when Boris slipped that into his
lockdown
speech.
No wonder you're all right. They've got no GCSEs and they're self-sufficient.
So how does it work?
Well, they have got GCSEs, but they've still not been told what is going on. So they just have to keep working really hard. They had actually, they were both due to sit at the beginning of January, their maths GCSE early, just something idiosyncratic that both their schools do. They're at separate schools, a girls' school and a boys' school. And so they managed to sit those, even though we'd locked down. So they have had the experience of going into an exam hall, sitting a GCSE. According to, you know, what we've heard, there's no GCSEs, but there's going to be some kind of assessment going on. So everything they do, they're trying to do, obviously, the best they've ever done, because they think this might count now. So it's brilliant, because they go online at about 8:30, emerge for food sometime around 12:30, and then go back on to about 4, and then they're like zombies because they're just on screens all day. So I mean, I do feel for them because it is hard, yeah, hard being on a screen all day, and also hard learning like that, you know, because it's not the best way, is it, to be learning?
Of course.
But at least they know, you know, they're focused. I think 2 years ago, if they were 13, I'd have no chance. You know what I mean? There'd be an Xbox on the floor. There'd be, you know, kind of one ear would have the school on, the other ear would probably have some music or their mates on. Now they're a bit more serious about things. So
in the world of Top Trump, I was going to say, in the world of Top Trumps of parenting in lockdown, because people always say, oh, it's difficult like this or that. Would you say that having two that are doing GCSEs that have been cancelled, it's probably a pretty cushy gig as parenting in lockdown goes?
I'm trying to dress it up, but, you know, the stress, it's very stressful. It is, because obviously the GCSEs were going to be a big stress this summer for us, weren't they? Having two kids doing GCSEs at the same time, I was thinking, for 2 years I've been thinking, oh my God, this is... And then last summer, of course, when all the big sporting events got knocked back to this year, I was then, oh my God, I'm not even going to be at home when they do their GCSEs, because they're managing to slot in all these. Now, they're probably going to cancel this summer sporting event. So I'm going to be home, and they've got no GCSEs. The worst part of it is for teenagers that they have no social life, you know? So you are their everything. And obviously, some days that's a good thing. And other days, you're the worst person that's ever walked on the planet, you know? So your ego takes a big bashing kind of on an almost daily basis.
Have you had to change your way you relate to them in a way? Have you had to offer a more matey vibe?
I've noticed my son calling me things like chief and mate. Chief. He went, all right, chief. He's quite a character anyway. So considering they're twins, they could not be more polar opposite, right? So they are an absolute, you know, kind of human experiment. He is 6'5". He eats almost 90.
Already?
Yeah.
How old is he?
15.
And he's 6'5".
Yeah. So that takes a lot of fuel, right?
God.
So my big thing is food.
I'd be terrified if he called me chief.
How tall's Kenny, Gabby?
He's just over 6 foot. I mean, he used to say 6'1" in the programmes when he played rugby.
No chance.
I was always, 6 foot, mate. And so Ruben's friends all think he's an experiment that we did as some kind of like, they call him the human sporting experiment that we kind of tried to create an Uber athlete or something. And so he's really big and eats a lot. And that's the biggest challenge with him, is keeping him fueled, you know, because he's...
Yeah. Normally you'd ask this if someone had a one-year-old, but could you just take me through his meals?
Right, when they're little, you want them to eat all the time, don't you? You're going, come on, eat your food. Now I'm going, surely you don't need a steak at 9 o'clock, you know. That fillet of beef's gone. I only bought it yesterday. He'll have breakfast, could be genuinely anything from tuna and noodles to a steak to 8 shredded wheat. It could be, I'm going to say, it could be anything like that. Then there's a mid-morning, there's always some kind of smoothie being blended about 11, maybe a tuna wrap. And then lunchtime, he will have anything from, you know, the whole bags of fresh pasta. He'll kind of have one of those with some chicken breasts or chicken Kiev or something, or some vegetables. Then there's a mid-afternoon snack before he goes in the gym. And then there's the evening meal, which he, you know, deems to eat with the rest of us. And then late before bed, another meal is made and created. And I said to him the other night when he was making his pre-bed meal, I was like, do you have to have this one? And he said, Mum, I wake up at 3 a.m. and I've got like cramps. I'm so hungry if I don't eat now. I just can't relate to it. You know what I mean? Because I'm like 47. My metabolism's almost stopped. You know what I mean? I'm just like, oh, a Malteser. That'll see me till tea time. But he's just hungry and obviously doing a lot of activity. So that is the hardest part of the first lockdown. I found that the biggest challenge, that they didn't just want a snack. I'll have an avocado on a piece of rice cake for my lunch.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
But the first lockdown, I was like, oh my God, I'm making so many meals all the time. But this lockdown, I've stepped back from the cooking. I said, right.
And how much exercise is he doing a day?
Normally he does loads, right? So he's playing sport, he's a rugby player and he's playing rugby. He's got to do his own training now, obviously. So he'll go out and he'll shoot some hoops for about an hour, and then he'll go for an hour, and he'll go for a walk, you know. So he's really good at getting out, actually, you know, and kind of, you know, doing the maximum in terms of what he's allowed to do socially, you know. So he'll go and meet a mate for a bike ride or something, and, you know. So he is normally very, very active.
It must be quite difficult for people who are 15 or into sport and stuff now, because that's really been taken away, right?
Yeah, and do you know what? I noticed it's the testosterone, isn't it? You know, it's that kind of release of kind of getting out. Yeah. If you're used to going around and bashing into people and all that kind of stuff. So he was much more mild-mannered when he was playing lots of sport. Yeah. He took all that. And then there's a peaks and troughs. You know, you don't know which one you're going to get, which one's going to come down the stairs.
Because you need an outlet.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. You do. And Kenny's beyond wrestling with him. You know, that's those days are gone.
What age did he overtake Kenny? What age?
Height-wise...
Yeah,
about 12, I think. But physical-wise, there's still a bit of a, you know, there was still a bit of a match in the summer, but that's gone. That is done. Yeah.
Has Kenny accepted that though? Does he know?
I mean, you know when the bareback kind of just bows out and walks backwards into the bushes in Uganda. It's that kind of, silverback, sorry, not the bareback. Bareback's on the.
We got that.
Wow. Okay.
Such an exciting lockdown here. The silverback, sorry. But my daughters, so they're twins, obviously. So
she's 3 foot.
Yeah, you know which one got all the food in the womb. Like,
the placenta got dominated by Ruben.
She's actually 5'9". She's taller than me, so I am I'm the smallest in the family. But she's really lucky because where we live, she's a horse rider. She does show jumping, so she competes normally all the time. Mm. She's got her. We allowed her to bring. Well, we didn't allow. It's much better actually to have them here. She started to bring her horses home in the summer.
Into the house.
Well, she actually only had one. She had one horse. Suddenly we got four. When I allowed her to bring one home, she went, it needs a friend, right? So she picked up this like really cheap little kind of, you know, almost like the Steptoe and Son of the pony world. You know, it arrived kind of like looking bedraggled, and she's going to turn it into a champion apparently. And then she's got a foal, which is a project, and then she's got a Shetland. So she just morning, noon and night in between her lessons, she's outside.
It becomes totally addictive. My parents had one horse when we moved to Devon. At one point it got up to 12.
Oh, don't tell me that. Because then they want to come in the house.
The thing is, from my point of view, someone having a horse, like, so I grew up in Southeast London, like, you know, having horses, I always think of it as sort of like, you know, like as sort of the super rich person type of thing. But Josh, you're not like from money, as it were, but like, because of like, if you are in the countryside, is it just cheaper to have land and to have horses? Is it like a...
Yeah. So in Devon, like loads of people had horses.
Okay.
Like when we used to live in London, I took her to Richmond Park when she was three and she did a pony trek. That was the worst thing I ever did, right? Because from that day, that was all she wanted to do. We moved out into the countryside about 7 years later, and that was when she really got into it. But I'm from Leeds. I'm from a city. I didn't ride horses, right? Yeah. I'm not... So Claire Balding, who I work with, obviously, is my horsey, you know, connection. I know nothing about horses. So Claire, the other day, because I'd said to her, look, have you got any old kind of horses that can come be a friend for this horse, right? So she loves a challenge like that. So she, within seconds, there was a horse being lined up to come over here, right, to be a friend. So I said to her, how did this happen? I've gone from one to four. She said, you're upper middle class now.
I said,
Claire, I'm still that working class girl from Leeds. I'm not, you know, this is... Because you're right, the horsey world is really weird. You can have, like, we go to shows where you've got people with these 200 grand horse lorries, right, and a fleet of horses. And then you've got somebody that looks like they've just nicked the van from down the road. The horse gets off and kind of, you know, and it's, like, held together with sellotape on its bridle. It's a completely, just totally democratic in the sense of you don't know what you're going to get. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think when you're from a city, you just assume all people with horses are really rich, but it's a kind of a countryside thing. If you've got the space, you can have them, and it can it's like anything. You can have an expensive horse box or an old van.
Exactly.
I once saw a horse being put in the back of a transit van near me to be moved somewhere. I didn't think it would go, but it didn't seem bad. Obviously, that is bad, isn't it? It's sort of animal cruelty to a point. But at the time, it just felt like, oh, that's quite impressive, like getting a piano in there. Do you know what I mean? Angled in.
Sometimes you see vans at horse shows, and you think, "That I'm sure that used to be an ice cream van." And
do you find it scary watching her do the show jump? Is it show jumping, you said she does? Do you find it scary?
What? Between the pair of them, her jumping over like 1.20 meter jumps and him smashing into people, you know, in rugby, I suppose I should be on the edge of my seat kind of feeling. But I kind of trust what they're doing, that they know what they know, that they're okay. And that I don't think you could enjoy it. And I have to say, one of the great enjoyments in my life is going to watch my kids do sport, because when you're doing your sport as a living, you know, like when you go and watch sport like I do to kind of talk about it, it's not the same. You know, you're kind of doing it as a job. When I go watch them, it's pure enjoyment for me. So
are you competitive on the sidelines though? Do you want them to win, or do you control it?
Well, when Lois qualified for the nationals last year, and all you can hear in the background of Kenny videoing her around, when she she did brilliantly. And then the middle fence of three came down and I went, shit, shit, shit. And it's just silence apart from me swearing in the background. And with Ruben, I'm like, I try not to. And then I just got, you know, I just get a bit excited sometimes, you know, like I get, because it does, you know, you've got all the other parents on the touchline and you're kind of all going a bit, or sidelines, you're all going a bit mental.
And the presence of Gabby and Kenny Logan also at a rugby match, you guys are like, you know, you watch proper rugby. You've got an international rugby player there.
Well, Kenny goes off and watches on his own because he just, like, some of the chatter, you know, he goes, like, some of the things that he hears the parents saying, he just finds it all a bit like, oh, shut up. So he just walks off on his own sometimes, which I think looks so rude. He just disappears and leaves us all. And I'm left then with, you know, everybody else who's just having a nice day out, you know. But Ruben's plays for Wasps Academy, and there's been a couple of times where Kenny's been watching matches when he's playing for Wasps, where there's been some dads who are, or mums whose background in rugby isn't what Kenny's was, you know, and they have no idea that Kenny played rugby, and they'll turn around and say something to him and Kenny will say, well, you know, and then later they come up and go, I'm so sorry, I didn't know you were actually. And they're trying to like tell Kenny what's going on.
Yeah, he knows a lot. He knows what's happening.
It is kind of strange, I think, for Ruben sometimes, you know, because obviously at Wasps, Kenny played there for, you know, 10 years, so...
Mm. And have you ever seen, has Ruben ever had like a fight on the pitch or a bit of a, you know, in rugby, they sometimes kick off a bit. What's that like as a mum to watch that happen, even though he's this big 6'5", like, bloke?
I don't mind that so much. There was one match last year where he said something really sarcastic to the ref, which in rugby, you know, you don't back chat the ref. The ref was having an absolute shocker, by the way. He was useless, right? and apparently, according to some of the parents, smelt like he might have had a big night the night before.
Okay.
So,
absolute legend today.
But he got the scoreline wrong, and it was impossible. What he'd given was impossible for what had happened in the game. You know what I mean? Like Ruben went, so let's just add that up, or did something really sarcastic and kind of. And I could hear him, and I was going. And at that point, the headmaster of the opposition school had stood next to me as well. So I was like, oh, he's going to say, who's that horrible child? And I'm going to go, it's my. But they're kind of big learning curves, those things.
I think that sums up rugby, that you can spend 80 minutes smashing someone, but if you make a sarcastic comment, that is too far.
It sounds like they're both very talented athletes, you know, playing at Wasps and Nationals in the show jumping. How important is like the academic stuff?
Do you know the sporting stuff? I genuinely, when they were little, I tried to get them to play every instrument in the world. You know what I mean? I was like, I didn't want them to just feel they had just to choose sport as a kind of passion in life. And all I wanted them to do was be interested in stuff. And so, and have something that they felt, you know, kind of that they wanted to commit to and give something to. So I'm glad they both have, and they both love their sport. But they also, Ruben's really good at drama. He's going to do drama GCSE, and he's on about going to theatre school or drama school if sport doesn't work out. He loves acting and stuff.
So, do you know what? If you're 6'5", there's going to be some good roles there.
Well, I don't think so. I said to him, the only thing you can do is hope The Rock retires, because that's literally it, you know. I said, you'll never be a leading man.
Also, no. he's not tapped out of growing yet. They grow to 21, don't you?
Well, I keep telling him that he's finished. And he said, you know, he's like, Mum, I'm going to keep going to her, because we've got a friend locally who's a top policeman in the Met, who's 6'9". And he keeps telling me that he kept on growing, you know, beyond 15. Ruben said, Mum, I think I've got my wisdom teeth through. So, you know, that's it. I've stopped now, because he doesn't want to. He wants to go to 6'7", right? That's his kind of, that's his optimum
that's
height.
His goal.
Yeah. And so I said, oh, Brie. And then he came through the other night and he went, I think they're just molars, Mum. I think they're just molars. But schoolwork is, you know, I said to them both, whatever happens in life, yeah, she's not, you know, being an international show jumper is not, you know, it's a pipe dream. You know what I mean? You might as well try to say I want to be the queen. It's just so hard. So she's really academic, and she wants to go to university, and she, you know, she's got kind of her dreams. Ruben, he doesn't love learning as much. Let's say that. But, you know, I said, you just got to work hard and do the best you can. And that's, you know, put as much in as you want out, basically. So,
With twins, do they feel like they're competing with each other? Like, so one's more academic than the other, or one's taller than the other, or whatever.
Yeah.
Do they feel like they're being compared? And was that kind of a thing that's...
You know, until they were 7, they were at the same school and we lived in London, and we didn't move out so that they could go to separate schools. There just happened to be a lot of single-sex schools where we live, and it was probably the best thing for them, because every parent's evening, Ruben was a bit of a, as the Scots would say, a raj. when he was at his first school, right? So he was always in trouble. And so parents' evening was always 15 minutes on him, and then 2 minutes at the end going, yeah, reading's going well, you know. And that was, and so, and so actually, and she also then used to start to kind of try and protect him a bit as well, which was, you know, not her role. Yeah. She didn't have to do that at school. So going to separate schools was great. And always, there was one moment where Ruben brought a couple of lads back from school when he was about 9. And I went into his bedroom, he was with the boys, and I said, oh, Lois will be home soon. And one of the boys went, who's Lois? And I went, how long have you known Ruben? And this kid went, 2 years. I went, and you never mentioned you've got a twin sister. And this boy went, you've got a twin sister. And I was like, that's such a boy thing, isn't it? Yeah. So it's quite nice for them to have had that not being compared all the time. Yeah. You know? And they go in swings and roundabouts in terms of like who, you know, popularity and all that kind of stuff. They kind of be a bit, they're a bit competitive about sometimes, but actually they're really lovely with each other. And, you know, they kind of got a nice, healthy... When I say competitiveness, I mean, there's four of us competing in this house, not just those two. So,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's in the gene, that's in the blood more than anything.
And they're, you know, they're kind of... They'll say things to me like, what did you get for your maths GCSE again? I'm like, really?
what are board games like in your house? Does it get competitive?
They usually descend into kind of some kind of fight that, you know, we're better off playing with other families, you know, mixing the families up than doing
it. Yes, that's a good way of doing it.
Yeah.
And was Ruben quite big for his age growing up? Did he always look older than his sister, even though they were twins, because he was so big?
They're the same weight at birth. And amazingly, they came out at 6 pounds each, which I thought was incredible that they were the same weight, because all the way along, they told me that the one on top, that was Lois, was bigger and the one on the bottom was smaller. And he came out first, and he was 6 pounds. She was 6 pounds, just about on the nose. And then suddenly, literally within 3 months, he trebled his birth weight. So by he was 18 pounds after three months. There's no doubt in my mind he should have been a stone at birth. You know,
he would have been gone.
He saved me all sorts of aggro coming with a partner. So he was always really big, and that, you know what it's like with toddlers. When, like, even a ball pit or something with two of them, people thought that he was 5 when he was 2, you know, and they go, tell your son to stop doing that. I'm like, he's 2. Are you try telling him? I don't know. Yeah. And they go, 2? You know, so... So it was kind of for a while, and people expected so much more from him than he was capable of. And even, you know, as a boy, he was always behind her in terms of developmental things. He didn't walk till he was 18 months. She was like 11 months or something. Mm. He didn't even bother crawling. He just did this commando thing, you know, where he just scooped his arm and kind of dragged himself around.
So it does sound like some sort of sporting experiment.
Does he? He must get to the age now where, when I was 15, I had no hope of getting served in a pub. But he presumably can go anywhere, right?
Remember Eat Out to Help Out last year?
Yeah.
Right? He got, he had a girlfriend, first girlfriend. Right? I'm not going to say too much about that. It's his private life, right? But they went out to an Eat Out to Help Out locally, this pub, and they gave them the drinks menu, right? So bless him. When he came in, he was honest. He said, Dad, I had a pint. So Kenny went, what? He went, well, they gave me the drinks menu. So I just said, and he said, and I remembered what I'd heard when we went out for dinner last week and somebody said they had a Foster's. I went, I'll have a Foster's. And so, and I said to Kenny afterwards, thank God he didn't just start going through the gins. Do you know what I mean? I'll try your London. That looks lovely, that dry gin. And then we'll go on to the vodkas. So, clearly from last summer, that is not going to be a problem. So you've got to have the conversation changes, doesn't it?
But you know what, Gabby? He can't get drunk at that size. You're going to be fine. There's no way he's ever going to get drunk.
But, and it's nice, though, that he told you, because a lot of kids wouldn't have been honest. So it's a nice relationship where he can come home and say that he did that, and it'd be like an interesting thing to talk about, rather than be scared to tell you or keep it a secret and keep going. So that, you know, I mean, that's a good way.
A plus point.
Pretty good. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, it's a plus point that your 14-year-old's ordering pints, you know.
You're at an interesting stage because you've got twins. And they're at 15 and they're going to be leaving in about 3 or 4 years. How do you think about that? How does that feel?
A lot, because especially, you know, we're coming up now to the summer where they're telling me all the time, Mum, this is the summer of our lives. This summer you've got to just like, you know, release control. We're going to go to festivals. You're not, mate. There aren't going to be any. and we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Because I'm not... I'm not something that micromanages. I'm not a helicopter, but of course I want to know what's going on. You know what I mean? I'm not like going just go out into the wilderness for days on end and, you know, and have frank conversations about the dangers of drugs and alcohol and everything. And so you've got all those things going. Then you think, it's two more years and then they're off to university and then they make all kinds of stupid decisions, you know, and do things that they want to do. So, so at the moment you're trying to kind of feed in stuff that you hope is going to give them, you know, a good grounding when they leave, but also at the same time thinking it's going to be so quiet. It's going to be so weird. And, you know, why don't I have more children? You know, beating Kenny's chest. Why didn't you let me have more kids?
You've got the horses, so you'll have to look after those horses, aren't you?
Oh, no, they're going. she won't let me look after those. I mean, I genuinely, friends of mine have had later babies, so they've got like older ones, and then they've gone and had one in their early 40s, mid-40s. And I'm slightly envious of that kind of, you know, having somebody coming through, coming up the rear.
Your podcast, The Midpoint, which I was like, well, this doesn't apply to me. And then I listened. I'm in the age range, Gavin. I'm middle-aged. You drew the bottom line at 35. Are you having me? Are you kidding me?
The Economic and Social Research Council did that, Josh, not me.
So the podcast is interviewing people in middle age about how they're
feeling. Midlife.
Yeah. Sorry. Then the lineup is mind. It was like a list of people I've thought, oh, we should get them on. So you've got some great people. You've got Richard Osman, Mariella Frostrup, Denise Lewis, Catlin Moran, Michael Johnson, the sprinter.
Yeah, I know. Oh, Stiffback Johnson. Did he sit Stiffback in the Zoom chat? Absolutely Stiffback Zoom chat. Here he goes.
So I work with him all the time, right? So I'm sitting in his office in Malibu, right, in his house. He literally sat up on his chair and behind him he had two glass shelves and on it, the only things on it were Olympic gold medal, a gold Nike running spike and two BAFTAs, right? That was all he felt, right? And I actually said to him, I said, because the thing about working with Michael Johnson, right, he never wastes a word. He will talk for 2 minutes, but there is never a superfluous sentence or any grammatical kind of, you know, mistakes or ums and ahs. And I said, your shelf sums you up. You're just precision. You know, that is, this is me, some gold medals and some BAFTAs. That's all you
know. I did running and then I did broadcasting and I was the best of both of them. Yeah, here they are. Exactly. What do you want to know about my life?
But he had a stroke in midlife. I mean, Michael Johnson, one of the fittest men in the world. And he didn't even, you know, didn't realise what it was. He came out of the gym and his arm was spontaneously moving. And he rang, when he told me the story the first time, I couldn't help laughing. So I rang the Michael Johnson Performance Centre. As you do. And spoke to the top doctor, and the top doctor told him, get to a hospital. And if he hadn't gone to hospital at that point and gone home and gone to sleep, which was his natural inclination, he'd be dead, basically. Whoa. Or he'd be so badly paralysed that he would not be doing what he does now, which is he's back jogging and, you know, everything.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. I never knew that. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So that I'm definitely going to listen to the podcast. That's the best advert for a podcast inside a podcast. I'm actually hosting my podcast and I want to stop doing this to listen. You've absolutely done me. Can I ask about Richard Osman as well?
Yes.
Did you do it in a studio with him or did you do it over Zoom and online?
No, do you know when we did it actually? In the offices of my agents in Chiswick. It was in the period where you could meet up with about, I'd say a quarter I've managed to physically be with people.
Oh, that's okay then, because I asked him to do our one and he said, no, sorry, I can't. I haven't got the right setup at home. It'd have to be a studio. So
he wanted to wait.
I just wanted to make sure he weren't lying.
So you're not interested in what's in it? You just wanted to make sure that
just the booking process, really. It's just what, TV and being tall, probably, is it?
He said to me, how tall's your son? Good, I'm in.
in fact, he was 5'9" at 35, Richard Osman, and he grew later.
One of Kenny's best friends and teammates from Wasps and England, well, Kenny didn't play for England, obviously, but British and Irish Lions, he was 5'9" at 16 and 6'9" at 17.
Wow.
And I said to him, what was that year like? What happened in that year? He said, I come home from school and literally, and this is visual here, but he said his sleeve of his shirt would just be coming back to kind of like every day. It would be and he'd have to
walk
down after school for an hour and a half because his bones were aching so much. And couldn't do any sport. He was just completely, you know. And then at the end of it, like the Incredible Hulk, he just got some new clothes and got on with his sporting career.
Year out, growing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's mad, isn't it? Yeah. So, would you consider me and Rob to be part of the mid? What was the term?
Podcast called Midpoint.
Yeah, but what was the term you used?
I only used midlife because middle age I said middle-aged used to sound like it was beige, wasn't it? Middle-aged.
Yeah.
Middle-aged. It's never a term of, it's never a compliment that when you say that.
Yeah.
Oh, you're so middle-aged. And so the reason I started it, completely self-serving, was obviously a bit like you two, you know, with your damn parenting, was just to kind of go, okay, what is this? What does it mean physically? What's happening to us? You know, what's going to happen to us? And also wanting to feel like I was inside as kind of vibrant and energetic as I've ever been, but outside clearly changing. And so wanting to meet people that are doing good stuff in their midlife as well. I mean, like Richard's a great example. You know, he didn't appear on telly till he was 40 with Pointless. I think it was 39 or whatever. And he's just produced one of the best-selling books of all time, nearly 50, you know. So you can have lots of different, I mean, obviously he's an exceptional character, but you can do more than one thing. You can change your mind about what you want to do and pursue something else. So,
and did being in midlife creep up on you? Yes.
It truly did.
When did you realise?
Well, about a year and a half ago, I had a moment where I kind of went like that. You know, when you walk past a window or a mirror or a reflection, and I saw something different, you know, and I was kind of, because we're in this business, right? You get lit well, you have makeup artists, you know, you've got people telling you look great. Yeah, you look great, you know. Yeah. And there was this one moment where I just saw kind of what probably other people see. And I was like, oh, I am older. And like, really, you know, and then I started looking at myself physically thinking, oh, and you know, I've noticed, like, when I have like a really good Christmas, one run's not going to get rid of it anymore, you know. Yeah. And all that stuff just started. My metabolism feels like it's slowing down, and also I started to feel a bit grumpy about things, and I don't want to be a grumpy old woman, you know.
That's
not where I'm heading. So, what is that about? And that is all to do with hormones, because all your happy hormones start to leave you. So you become, you know, your potential to become a bit angrier, which Kathleen Moran, she was on the podcast, she likes, because she said it makes her feel more like her male colleagues. So she's like, kind of, she goes, this is why they've all got ISAs and second homes. So I wanted to understand a bit more about that and see, you know, whether, can you exercise your way out of it? No. Can you eat yourself out of it? No. What is, well, sometimes it's just being kind of accepting, isn't it, of what's going to happen.
And it must be, your teenagers must see you as from a different generation. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I think about when I was 15, I mean, no offence in this, Gabby, but my parents felt like I'd like incomparable different age to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you just don't. My parents had me quite young. They're in their early 20s. So they were still kind of going out a lot, you know, because they're only in their late 30s. So when I was 17. But my kids, because I was 10 years older than that, I was 32 when I had them. So they just, there's some things where they're just rude, you know, like you just don't understand. I mean, how could you possibly understand? You didn't even have Snapchat, you know, it's like.
Yeah.
And then other things they're like slightly more kind and benevolent about, because they kind of, you know, want to understand what did you eat? You know, they'll say things like that. What did you have for dinner?
A normal amount compared to you, mate.
Yeah, well, they were asking Kenny this question last night, because Kenny grew up on a farm in Scotland, and they were like, well, what kind of things? Because last night I made this incredible tofu vegan dinner, right? And they went, Dad, I bet you never had anything like this on the farm, did you? So yeah, it is strange, and you have to. I'm lucky, I think, in a way, working in sport, I deal with all these young sports people all the time, these footballers who are like 20, 21. And sometimes you think, oh, am I a dinosaur to them? But they look at me and think, who's the old lady coming on, you know, being wheeled on to interview me? So having the kids, my kids, sometimes a good kind of prism as to kind of what is going on, you know.
Yeah, and it brings you back. I find that. I think, like I said before, when you have kids, you sort of, your pop culture references fall out your head because you just see BBs, you know, getting them fed, getting them to nursery. But then once they get to teenagers, you sort of catch up with all your friends that didn't have kids, because you get to learn about it from teenagers, and whether it's TikTok or Snapchat or this or that, things
like that.
It's so funny.
When Kenny and Ruben go up to Coventry, which is where Wasp's training is, so it's like an hour and a half journey for them after school and stuff. So on the way there, Ruben gets to play his music, right, which Kenny describes as swear word.
I think dads have described music like that for 100 years.
On the way back, it's freestyle, so they can kind of like choose a track each, but Ruben, because he's now trained, he's quite happy to play Sweet Caroline or a bit of Oasis, you know what I mean, on the way home. That's fine. Or a bit of Fleetwood Mac, it's okay. And Kenny's always like, oh, the journey home is so much nicer.
But do you know what? That's better than, I wouldn't want to be one of those parents that's trying to be down with their kids.
Yeah, it's too much. Yeah. It's too much.
Yeah.
And you said before you like it would have been nice to have another other kids and stuff like that. Was that a consideration? Do you know? Would you want more? Were they for IVF as well? Is that right? You had them for IVF?
Yeah, they were. And so, being candid, we had more blastocysts than you know. So you have to put them on ice, and you decide whether you're going to have another baby, and which is a really to decide. You know. In that way, it's such a kind of pressure-filled conversation to have, you know. So when you've got two toddlers running around at 18 months, what kind of maniac is going to go and volunteer to put, you know, another couple of eggs back in? So at that point, we're both in this stupid mindset, as new parents often are, when it gets back to normal. And of course, what you realise when they're 17 is it never gets back to normal, you know, or 15, it's not, that doesn't happen. So when they were about 10, we had to have a really serious conversation about it because that's when you're they're supposed to no longer be frozen, you know. And we kind of walked to the pub in the village and we sat down and we kind of like, you know, what should we do? And at that point, I was probably in my early 40s and I just felt like I was too far from having them, you know, that it felt like too big a gap. And so we didn't. And then Kenny, just about a year ago, on one of those days, you know, in those days where everything's great, the kids are great, it's all good and life's great. And he went, we should have had more. I was like, don't give me that now. But I always thought I'd have four or five because I'm one of four and Kenny's one of three. And you know, when your experiences growing up are what you think you're going to have. But we do often thank our lucky stars because Kenny's business partner had, he's got triplets and one is a girl and the other two are twin boys. So the egg split in the womb. So we often say, imagine if Reuben's egg had split, we'd be bankrupt. So, you know.
Triplets. What was the moment when you found out it was twins like?
Really lovely. Yeah, it was really amazing. Yeah, because we just wanted to be pregnant. So it was like kind of, we just wanted to say there's a beating heart there, you know, so to say there's two. And we didn't tell anybody it was twins for ages because we just couldn't quite believe our luck, you know, so we wanted to wait till we got to our first proper scan. Because obviously with IVF, you're starting to get pregnant 10 weeks before you get pregnant. So it's the longest pregnancy ever. It's like an elephant, you know, so you go back kind of almost a year. So because you start having the drugs and doing all the tests and all of that. So so it's a long old time while you've been on that journey before you even tell anybody. So
was it a tough process going through it all? Obviously it works out well because you got your two kids, but is it quite tough?
Do you know, I think you said it at the very beginning about a sports person's mindset. And I think we both kind of had that, you know, attitude towards it. So we tried to say, right, okay, if this doesn't work this time, then, you know, so it's tough in as much as, you know, you're putting your body through a bit. And actually the interesting thing about midpoint is I've discovered if you go through IVF, which some of your listeners might be and might, you know, might be thinking about, you can have your menopause earlier because you've mixed up your hormones and stuff. Yeah. And so I didn't know any of that, you know, because you kind of only read the bits you want to read, don't you?
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
You don't kind of take in everything. And so it wasn't hard because I think there are a lot harder things to go through in life. It was just not the way we thought it was going to happen, you know, because we were like two healthy people going, well, what's, and there wasn't anything wrong. We were told we had unexplained infertility. So you're like, what does that mean? Oh, just keep going. I was like, I'm not going to keep going forever, you know. So obviously then you start going down a medical road, which you don't think, you know.
Yeah. It's fascinating, though, because it's like, it's something that wasn't talked about as much as it should have been. Do you know what I mean? In the last maybe 20 years, it's really opened up as a subject, which is just people are much more comfortable talking about, which I think is really good.
I think it's really interesting as well. That when I got a phone call from the Sun newspaper within about 10 minutes of leaving the hospital for my first scan saying, we hear you're expecting twins. And I went, what? And then the first question that the journalist said was asked was, are there twins in your family? And the inference was obviously that she knew that it wasn't. Do you know what I mean? I was like, kind of, because she could easily find out there are no twins in my family, you know? And so, and I made the decision at that moment that I wasn't going to hide the IVF because I felt like I was so grateful to the incredible people who'd helped me get to this stage that I didn't want to kind of, you know, I wasn't embarrassed by it. And I was quite happy to talk about it because it felt like a natural process, as unnatural as it kind of is. Do you know what I mean?
Of course. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a lot of people have come up to me over the years and famous people, you know, people that you'd know who, I had it, you know, but they've never talked about it. And I think there was a stigma almost that you're not quite complete or you're not quite right if you can't do it. Do you know what I mean? If you can't do it. And I think that's, hopefully, that's gone now and people don't feel like You know,
yeah, I think so. I feel like it used to be thought of like that, but I'd never think of it like that. It just seems like, oh, that's just a... If it's not quite happening there, you just change that and then that happens. It's sort of like the same way as you would if you had a bad knee.
Yeah.
And it, like, you'd need to get it adjusted.
Use science and medicine to help.
No one would go, oh, look, walking about, but not the normal, like the natural way with your knee. Like, oh, I want to be to limp.
We do those kind of jokes on The Last Leg, actually, Rob. So.
Oh, yeah, sorry. That's your gig. I apologise.
It's funny you like this. When the kids were about, we decided not to tell the kids until they were old enough to actually comprehend what that means. Because, you know, it wasn't like we were lying. We didn't say one night your dad and I got together. But we thought, if they don't even know what procreation, you know, what it is to actually have a baby, how can they get their head around doing it a different way? So once they started to have sex education at school and started to know, or thought they knew what was going on when they're about 10 or 11, we were driving up to see some friends up on the Wirral, and we were kind of somewhere on the M6, let's say Knutsford Services, right? And
I'm picturing it, I'm there.
Out of all the service stations that talk about IVF, Knutsford.
We were still in the car, and I turned around and I said, guys, something I want to tell you that, you know, that I think you should know. And so I told them, right? Honestly, the way they reacted, you just thought I told them that I was mainlining heroin on an evening, right? They kind of, they literally were like, what? 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 And the movement said, what, are we adopted as well? And I was like, they really kind of blew it out of all proportion. They kind of you know, made it very dramatic. And I said, guys, it's really, you know, and then Ruben went, hang on a minute. And he named a couple of other kids. He went, I bet they are too. And I was like, what? And he went, yeah, I bet they are as well. I said, okay, maybe I've gone too soon with this conversation, right? So we got to the...
So how old were they at this point?
They were about 12 or 11, 12, right? They knew what IVF was, or they thought they did, right? So we explained it all. And then they were kind of fine about it. And I started turning it into a kind of, we really wanted you. We kind of had to choose.
You're not
an accident, you know, and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, proof you're not an accident.
Yeah, exactly. And then we get to our friend's house, and three of my three daughters were there. And I saw them run straight over to the girls. And there's this deep conversation. And they came back and they went, yeah, we've told the girls. We told them we're IVF. And I went, oh, right, OK. I said, what did they say? And they went, they're not bothered. No, they wouldn't be. It's really... And so they laugh about it now because, like, they've done obviously a lot more in biology and things, and they kind of understand it.
That's amazing, isn't it? Well, I suppose it feels like a big bit of news, but in a way it's a complete non-bit of news.
Exactly. That was the point. For me, obviously, I felt like it was going to be... I was broaching this big topic with them. But actually, they were quite fine without it. It wasn't...
But it's really, once you've got the required result, IVF's sort of like a non-conversation, really. It's only a real sort of thing to think about and
at
be concerned about. Yeah, during the process. So, yeah, it's quite funny. They're like, yeah, we've got to tell you something. And they're telling everyone, IVF guys.
I'm so disappointed you haven't asked me about... I was listening to Mark Watson telling you about some kind of bad parenting, like when his pram fell off the train and stuff.
Yeah. Let's don't go.
Go for it, Gary.
Because I thought, okay... Because also, you've talked a lot about, you know, Ruben, sport and all that, and it makes sound like, you know, everything's going really well, right? Okay,
yeah.
So I don't want to leave anybody listening to this thinking that, you know, that it was always thus. And having twins, obviously, you have a lot of challenges. It's tiring, and you know how tiring kids are. So my pram incident was a good one. I was walking along Barnes High Street, where we lived at the time, and I'd stopped at a Cafe Nero, and I got Lois out, and I was holding the double pram, and then I was just looking at the menu or something and let go of the pram with Ruben in it, right? And there was a slight slope on the pavement, right? Which I hadn't noticed. And the pram obviously took off towards the main road, right? There was I would declare a 17-ton lorry coming round the corner.
Oh, my word.
This guy appeared from nowhere, right? It was November, everybody's in coats and hats. He was wearing a T-shirt and jeans and was totally incongruous on the high street. You know, he just didn't look like... pulls the pram off, like, you know, gets the pram before it hits the road, and just gives me it back in a very calm way and walked off. Never said a word, right? Just, I just stood there, like, in shock because
Oh, my God.
I know. I still went in and had a coffee, which to this day I'm not sure was a good...
Well, you needed it, mate. You needed it.
Everybody in the coffee shop had just seen me nearly lose a child to the road.
Oh, my God.
And, but that came flashing back when I was listening to that. I was like, oh, my God, I had a pram moment too.
You have them and you forget, don't you, until other people spark your memory.
And the better one, actually, was when he once pulled another person's pram over, Ruben. I left him next to a pram in a park, turned around, and he pulled the other pram over. over because he was like quite strong. And this poor child was like kind of like struggling to get out of his pram. And the mother came running and said, "Your child just pulled my child's pram over." Sorry, he's only a year old. I don't know how he did that.
Gabby, we always like to end by asking, well, shall I ask it, Rob?
Why yeah, you go for it, Josh. You know what the question is by now.
Yeah, I do. I'm across the format, aren't I? is there anything that your husband does, parenting-wise, that annoys you, but you haven't had the kind of guts or the reason to bring up to their face? But if you said it now, it'd be a good way, if he listened to this, for him to find out.
See, after 15 years, I you know, I pretty much tell Kenny when he does something wrong on a daily basis.
Yeah, I can't ever imagine you not... Well, from working with you, Gabby, I can't imagine you biting your tongue if you think something needs to happen.
But one of the things that recently I've kind of been quite... because Kenny has become, and it's lockdown that's done it to him. Right, I like a clean, tidy house, don't get me wrong, right? Yeah. But he has become obsessed. Like, you know, just like there can never be anything out of place. And he loves to get the dustbuster out. He's dustbusting and he's all the time doing stuff like that. Kind of, I'm like, just calm down a bit, You know, just like let's just let something kind of happen. You know, if a pair of boots don't make it to the boot room within 20 seconds, you know, there's kind of like, so, and he's become, the fury has kind of like, you know, overtaken him. And so I've had to kind of like recently just go, look, you've got to like learn. There's a sliding scale of things that kids do, right? That is kind of, you know, and this is really not up there at the moment with teenagers. No. This is...
exactly.
They're in lockdown. They're learning on computers all day long. I'm prepared to let the shoes go for a minute here and let's just, you know, that's, if he's listening, just let it go.
Yeah. Be in a park with cider, couldn't they?
Yeah, exactly.
I think there is a point where I think tidiness during lockdown is a real outlet for frustration. Do you know what I mean? I find myself getting annoyed with mess when I wouldn't have before, but I suppose it's because you're in the house all the time.
You see it, don't you? And you see also what you see is broken stuff all the time. Last night, 10 o'clock, he's got a miner's lamp on and he's screwing the dishwasher. I was like, what are you doing? He went, the door's not shutting how it used to. I was like,
yeah.
I'm like, oh, it's 10 o'clock.
And you wouldn't care, would you, if you're out and about places?
God. Yeah. So everything has to be kind of right.
But I suppose he's like, you know, I know he's got business now and stuff of the outlet of playing rugby and that, you know, when you've gone such high adrenaline things, and even I notice if not gigging, I don't have my outlet where I can, if whatever's happened that day, I can just get on stage and then just let it out in that routine and those jokes and stuff. So, yeah, that's what I find.
I am very lucky because sport's been going on. So I get out of the house and I come in and he'll say things like, what do people say? Any conversations? What are they wearing now? How are they doing their hair now?
I cooked dinner last night and Lou was like next to me as I was cooking dinner. I was like, so she have a good day? She went, yeah. And then there was literally what it feels like is, imagine if like, and it's because of lockdown, but it feels like, you know, like, you know, a relationship doomed and there's nothing left to say to each other. But the reason for that is lockdown. But, you know, imagine if that was like that during the, I was like, she went, shall I just go watch the telly? I went, yeah, just go watch the telly. No one's done anything to talk about.
We started learning chess the other night. I said, right, we neither of us know how to play. Let's sit down, right, and do this. And we went on some website where you had to play against the computer basically to learn, and Kenny started getting like really, you know, the person we were playing against was in America. He's thinking, look at these mavericks with their moves. And I'm like, I don't think he is actually. I think he's thinking those two are rubbish. And he was so into it, and I thought, he needs like some kind of outlet. He's like, competitive chess is not going to replace rugby, mate.
Gabby, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Gabby Logan there, Joshua.
Love Gabby Logan. Always been a fan of Gabby Logan. Whenever you work with her, she's so much fun and she always kind of, she brings an energy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Because like, I didn't want her to sound like she's some sort of like boring robot broadcaster when she's so on it and knows exactly what she's doing. But she's just so professional, but she is fun. Like when I bump into her at those corporate-y things, she's like having a right laugh about all the people that are there and stuff. She's quite a good value.
Are you slagging all the people off, Rob?
Oh, let's face it, 1,000 people in a room, you've got 200 dickheads, surely.
Oh, bare minimum, mate. 400.
Whatever. whatever room you're in. What's the percentage? If you go to a gig and you like the band, you hate half the people there. She's great, isn't she, Gabby? Her son sounds like an absolute whopper.
Yeah, I know. You wanted to go, but you can't. You can't say the words. Could I see a picture of your 15-year-old son? That's too. But you kind of want to, right?
Yeah. Can please send me a picture of your giant child, please.
Yeah.
I wouldn't fancy my daughter show jumping though.
Oh, God!
Every jump.
Yeah. I mean, were you good at rugby at school?
No, I was just fat.
I hated rugby
so
much.
The worst thing about being an overweight teenager is people go...
Put in the scrum.
No, they go, do you play rugby? No, I don't. But you're saying that because I'm a fat boy. You're assuming I play because I'm fat. We never played rugby at my school. We played it like once and there was a load of fights. They just made us do basketball, ping pong or football.
Ping pong?
Didn't even. That's the only sports I did at school. I never did anything else. We did cricket for an afternoon, but everyone used to just field on the boundary and smoke in the woods.
Do you feel like you're beyond being young now?
Yes. So I still think of myself as like the new young comedian kid, but I'm not anymore. I've been doing it for like, what is it, 12, 13 years now. And I looked in the mirror the other day and I've got a craggy little eyes. But I don't want to be. The problem is, because I'm the smiley, young, excitable comedian.
How do you segue that into middle age?
That's a tough segue.
Before you know
it,
you're Joe Pasquale, mate.
Oh, yeah, but, oh God. But he's gone the other way. He started to wear leather jackets and get tattoos.
What?
Have you not seen him?
I'm not across Joe Pasquale, really.
Google Joe Pasquale topless.
I'm not falling for that again.
He looks great, though. Well done to him. He's got absolutely hench. But I don't know what I'm going to do, Josh. I've grown a beard, which I think is quite a good middle ground, because you don't want to be fresh-faced. Trying to continually be fresh-faced comedian is a tough ask. You know, and who's doing that still? Russell Howard's doing it well still, but he's got ripped. He's had his eyes done and his teeth done. He's at this stage now, Russell Howard, where, like, he looks incredible, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But I think a beard would set him off lovely now.
Yeah, but it's all right for you. You can grow a beard. My beard's too patchy, too rubbish.
Is it?
Yeah.
No, I just, it's hard to be fresh-faced comedian forever.
So you're gonna have a dark middle stage to your career then?
I've just been watching the Tiger Woods documentary about his downfall and then the resurgence.
Can't wait.
He is a complicated man.
Well, do you know what?
Yeah.
We'll wait for Gabby to interview Tiger Woods because he is. But we're always here if you want to talk about, you know, parenting Tiger. We are here.
Right. See you on Tuesday, people. Thank you very much for listening.
Bye.